Hey guys, welcome back to the Greek Current. I'm Thanos. I'm here with Andy Zamenidis at HALC headquarters.
Welcome back, everyone.
And calling in to join our roundtable is Professor Nikolas Economidis from NYU Stern School of Business. He's a recognized academic authority on network economics, electronic commerce, and public policy. His articles have appeared in top academic journals, and his commentary has also appeared in major news publications, including Bloomberg and Kathimerini. Professor, welcome to the Greek Current Podcast.
Good to be here.
And in a brief commercial for the professor, since most of you are listening to this podcast and online and you're using your iPhones or your Android phones, you're tweeting, you realize the value of the internet. And Professor Economidis is a leading authority on net neutrality. And I read his stuff on there. I think all of you who understand how important this issue is should look him up there as well.
So last week, we discussed in detail, you know, Greece's exits from its bailouts, and we're going to stay on that theme with Professor Economidis this week again. Professor, there's a saying that in every crisis, there's an opportunity. We've heard a lot about what Greece has suffered during this crisis, but what opportunities do you think were missed during this time?
Well, first of all, I think the adage is correct. There is an opportunity in every crisis. I'm afraid a lot of the opportunities of this crisis were lost. Let me start where I think is maybe the start of the problem, is that there are still in Greece a lot of Greeks, I wouldn't be able to say what percentage, but there are a lot who believe that the economic crisis was created by the memorandums, the mnemonia, that it didn't happen before because Greece had overborrowed. So that's problem number one, because if you really believe that the crisis came from the mnemonia, then you will not be able to understand how to fix Greece, how to fix the Greek economy. The second problem is that there are also a lot of Greeks who believe that the mnemonia was topoglyphia, usury, that the Europeans really ripped us off. And that's insane, given the fact that the European loans had an interest of less than 1% a year. The third myth that people still believe is that the Greek economy was okay in 2008-09. There was nothing wrong with it. And therefore, all we need to do is get out of the mnemonia and go back to 2000, to 2008-09. That's again wrong. We had big problems. We had overborrowed. Greece was running a 15% budget deficit in 2009. So first of all, to be able to understand, people have to abandon these three myths and understand that the problem to a huge extent is a Greek problem, and Greece needs to fix itself. And there is a way to fix itself, but it's a hard, it's not an easy way to fix. So I think that the challenge for Greece is to transform its economy to an investment-based and exports-oriented economy. That would mean shrinking the state, cutting taxes, shrinking the bureaucracy, changing the pension system, doing meritocracy and evaluations for all. And I can go into this in detail in more questions, but these were the major things that needed to be done, and they have been done to a small extent. They haven't been done to the extent that is necessary. And they still remain, this issue still remain the major challenge of this government and the next government.
You know, Professor, you've been speaking for the duration of this crisis and writing in great detail about the reforms that you just talked about really structurally reforming the Greek economy. And as as we air this episode, the Thessaloniki International Fair is kicking off. And as per tradition, both the Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, and perhaps the next Prime Minister, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, will be presenting an economic vision for the country. In light of all these reforms that you just alluded to, if one of them asks you for three reforms, three specific policy initiatives that should be taken right now, that could realistically be taken right now, what would they be?
Well, the first one is cutting taxes and shrinking the state so that it can be sustained with lower taxes. The second objective is to create the exports-oriented economy, which means, besides cutting taxes, also to cut the bureaucracy, to simplify, let's put it that way, the bureaucracy. And the third crucial thing, although it's kind of under, I mean, it's not perceived by all as being the crucial thing, is to create a pension system that would give the pensioner, each pensioner, what he or she contributed, plus interest or capital gains accrued, depending on how the money is invested, and not the present pension system, which is arbitrary. And let me say also, although I'm afraid I'm exceeding the 3 points, that to be able to do that, in the short run, a new government, let's say Kyriakos Mitsotakis government, would need to go to the Europeans and ask for a different target of primary surplus. The present government has promised the Europeans a 3.5% primary surplus target, which requires huge amounts of taxes and sucks all the money out of the economy. A new government would need to go to the Europeans with its new political power and its new credibility and tell them 3.5% is unsustainable. We ask for 1.5%, 2%, or 2.5% so that we can have $2 to $3 billion to do public investment. Because right now, for a number of years, the government and the state has invested zero. There is no public investment. And a lot of things cannot be done by private investment. So it's important to be able to have some private, some public investment as well.
Yeah. I'd like to follow up on that point, because a lot of what you're talking about and the goals and the reforms that you're suggesting are rendered almost impossible by this bailout exit deal that we've been evaluating and we saw last month. I know that you heard, you listened to Professor Galbraith's evaluation of the deal last week on this program, and it sounds like you don't think the terms of this deal provide the space for the reforms that you think are needed. How likely, and I consider that a massive failure both in negotiating strategy by this government, but a pretty severe European policy failure. How likely would the European creditors and Greece's partners be to give a new government additional flexibility?
It's hard to say. I mean, this is ultimately a political game, and will depend, in my opinion, on how strong the new government is. I think that it's likely that a new democracy government will have enough votes, more than 150 in the parliament, but I would like to see other parties, like Kynim Alagis, the center-left party, I would like that party to also support the government, so the new Greek government comes to the Europeans with a lot of power, a lot of political power at least. Now, will the Europeans actually adjust? They may. I mean, it's a matter, in my opinion, it's just a matter of postponement of a bit more of the Greek debt. As you saw in the last few months, the Europeans partly came through with a promise they had done in 2012 to postpone the maturities of some of the Greek debt. In 2012, that sounded much better than what they actually did, but to some extent, they did fulfill that promise. Now, going from 3.5% to 2.5%, let's say 1% of GDP, approximately $2 billion a year, for 2 or 3 years, is not an unmanageable number. It's a manageable number, which means that certain debts will have to be further postponed. So I don't think it's impossible. From at least from an economist's point of view, it's not impossible. It's not that difficult. Now, will there be enough political understanding of the Greek position to do that? I hope so. Ultimately, you have to keep in mind that if Greece doesn't grow, if the Greek economy doesn't grow fast for a number of years, Greece will never be able to pay in full its debt. Mm-hmm. It will never be able to do that. It will go to a new bankruptcy. It might not happen next year. It might happen 5 or 10 years from now. So it is in the interest of Europeans as well to give Greece
if they want to clear that debt and have a competitive. You know, ultimately, Greece is a member of the European Union, and if you have a two-speed Europe, I don't know how that's in anybody's interest.
That's correct. Well, that's correct. I mean, Greek economy is small, so it doesn't really create any big threat to anybody in the European Union. So it is really in the interest of the Europeans to find a way to make Greece grow quickly, because if Greece grows, then Greece will be able relatively easily to have the surpluses that are being discussed. But if Greece doesn't grow, and doesn't grow quickly now, that is in 2019, 20, 21, 22, 23, if it doesn't do that now, then it will go bankrupt in a decade. And then who knows if the Europeans are going to be willing to give new money to Greece then. And who knows what disaster that would be. I mean, we have no idea, really, because nobody can predict 10 years forward.
And the now, I'm assuming the urgency is because of the depths, like this is the right time for the bounce back, rather than some kind of morose, slow growth and right. You know, you're 1-2% and get stuck in really a rut in growing the economy.
Absolutely. You want to grow it quickly. You want the GDP, the debt to GDP ratio to go quickly down. Because if it does go quickly down, then also Greece would be able to get money from the world financial markets at reasonable rates. I mean, right now, Greece's ability to get money hovers at an interest rate of about 5%. Which is high, very high. So Greece needs to go, if possible, to 3.5%, to 3%, so that it can really sustain itself without the aid of the mnemonia, which after all ended. There is no more money coming from the mnemonia. So it's very, very important to do this quickly. And ultimately, it will depend, in my opinion, in political power of the new government. That's why I want as much as possible to have as many political forces in Greece supporting the new government, no matter what the majority of the new Greek government.
Professor, you mentioned that this deal that was put together in June is possibly just going to lead Greece to a new bailout. And given that, what would you grade, you know, the European institutions and how they've handled both the crisis and this bailout exit?
Well, I mean, the institutions weren't perfect. They were far from perfect. In the early stages, I would grade them as better than in the later stages. So in 2015, when Varoufakis played the wrong game and lost, Tsipras went to the Europeans with practically no cards in his hand. He had nothing, and the Europeans gave him positions that were onerous. They're difficult, especially the 3.5% deficit. And I think Tsipras, finding no alternative, essentially except a full bankruptcy, which Varoufakis was still advocating, but Tsipras was a bit more sensible, so he didn't do it. So Tsipras accepted these terms, but these terms are onerous. They need to be renegotiated. So I would give, I would say overall, maybe the Europeans get a B or a B minus, but the Greek governments get a D minus. They get the way that the Greek governments dealt with the crisis was horrible, especially the 2015 experience and the negotiation of Varoufakis and the referendum that that happened in July of 15. So I think that there are a lot of stuff that Greeks can do better. You know, the Greeks are smart people. You see them doing very well in foreign countries. We just need to have the right environment, the right legal and environment, an economic environment, so people can do well in Greece as well.
Yeah, can we continue along that line? Because, you know, in your writings, I encourage people to read you, especially in, you know, your writings in Kathimerini, but you talked a lot about the technocratic government and what they were able to get the debt down to.
Yes.
And then Samaras came, you know, and he also seemed to be doing everything that the Europeans wanted. Why didn't the European creditors act to save him? Why didn't they, you know, give him, I mean, clearly the level of debt and the, and it seems that, unless you have a different view, the EU, the ECB, the European creditors, the IMF have been fudging the numbers on, you know, where the debt was going. And as I pointed out last week, they originally said we want to get to 120% debt to GDP, and now they pretend they're satisfied with 180%. But why didn't they really incentivize the right actions? And it still doesn't seem that they're incentivizing the right actions.
Okay, that's a good question, actually. A lot of the decisions on the Europeans, on the European part, were ad hoc. There were no mechanisms to deal with such a crisis when the crisis erupted in 2010. So a lot of the responses were ad hoc and dependent to a significant extent on political circumstances in Europe, in the various countries, the various big countries, especially Germany and France. Now, it's fair to ask the question, why couldn't the Europeans give something more to Samaras in 2014 so that Samaras could get the 180 votes for a candidate for president of the Republic, of the Greek Republic, and therefore avoid elections and hopefully end the mnemonio in 2015 or at the latest in 2016 rather than 2018. There are two theories about it, and I can tell you both. I'm not sure which one is right. One is that the Europeans screwed up. They didn't understand how Tsipras was going to come with Varoufakis and negotiate the negotiating technique, let's say, that Varoufakis proposed, which was essentially, we're not making a deal forever. So maybe that's, they didn't understand that. They thought that Tsipras was going to be like a social democratic party, something like PASOK, and make a deal, and that would be it. And at the same time, avoid the demonstrations that were happening every day during Samaras time. The second theory is that the Europeans understood what Tsipras would be like, and they understood that eventually he would do what they wanted. And he would do, actually, the Tsipras government has accepted wholeheartedly the positions of the Europeans, while Samaras, to a large extent, was negotiating. Now, so the way that I would characterize Samaras and the previous government of Papandreou were like what the Democrats call resistance right now. So we are trying to do a bit less than what the Europeans asked, somehow less. Now, when we come to Tsipras, there is no less. Tsipras has done 100% what the Europeans wanted, at least on paper, at least in the way the laws are written. Now, it's true that laws don't get implemented in Greece. They're just written on paper and then they're thrown away. But unfortunately, that's the way Greece is and Greece has always been, that laws are not necessarily followed up. So I gave you the two theories. You choose among yourselves about this. I don't know how to evaluate one versus the other.
You know, in Alexis Papagelas once wrote the kind of value of what happened during the Tsipras government is that a lot of the old taboos were destroyed, a lot of the radical left taboos. Does it help? You know, I know you've characterized it as a lack of negotiating strategy, but does it actually help Greece in the future? Did Alexis Tsipras buy Greece as a nation a little bit more credibility with its creditors and its investors by saying, hey, if the radical left, the supposedly radical left will agree to this, you know, maybe somebody with a more, you know, Western liberalist view, a pro-business agenda can come up with something even better.
Well, I'm afraid that the Europeans will not forget Varoufakis. That is, if you look at Tsipras after August 15, let's say the last 3 years, he has been extremely aligned to whatever the Europeans wanted. But there were this first 6 months of his administration in which a huge amount of good faith was killed. And I don't think that can be written off by the Europeans. That's one thing, that as far as what the Europeans are concerned, I don't think they will trust 100% Tsipras ever. But on the other side, there is something about the Greek politics that Tsipras did accomplish, because the Greek public, by electing Tsipras, why did they do it? They did it because all the previous forces didn't work. They didn't work. They weren't consistent with the idea that nothing was wrong with 2009 and only the pneumonia created the crisis. So a lot of the Greek population in 2015 really did believe that there was nothing wrong and the pneumonia created the crisis. So this was rejected by Papandreou, this was rejected by Samaras, this was rejected by Papademos. So they went to Tsipras because Tsipras and Kamenos were saying that. They were saying, well, nothing was wrong in 2008-09. It was only the pneumonia that created the crisis. So Tsipras comes to power, eventually realizes reality, and does the opposite thing of what he promised. Well, that to some extent is progress, because it creates the possibility for the next new government to be not stuck on the pneumonia or under-pneumonia kind of
narrative.
Narrative, and go to a more reasonable narrative. I mean, we're not left or right. We're not pneumonia or pneumonia. Are we trying to do something positive for the country? And what do we really need to do? And what does really each one of us, not just the government, need to do?
A real debate on reform.
Yeah, and speaking of narratives, I want to shift a little bit. away from the crisis talk and focus on the Saloniki International Fair, which over the next week, it'll be taking place with the U.S. as the honored country. Professor, what could both the U.S. government and corporate America realistically do to help Greece?
Well, first of all, as you know, the political situation in the area where Greece is located, including the Middle East and Turkey, has changed and to a large extent deteriorated. And I think deteriorated from the point of view not only of Greece, but also of the United States. So in this juncture, the United States finds itself closely aligned with Greece in the area. Therefore, there is an opportunity for Greece to get some benefits from that. I think the direct and simple benefit would be more investment by the United States in military-related stuff in Greece, like expansion of the Souda base and other things that have been discussed here and there on this issue. And that kind of investment is to a large extent, easy to do, because it's not, because it's kind of in the slush funds of the executive of the United States and doesn't depend necessarily on new congressional approvals and a lot of process in the United States. So that's, I think, that's an easy to do, like a low-hanging fruit that Greece should take advantage of. In terms of general investment, the American businessmen are not quite that different from the businessmen around the world. They would like to see less bureaucracy and a cut in the corporate tax rate. It is really a shame that the Ellinico investment, which is an investment of over $5 billion, has been stalled now for 3 years after it has been agreed on various bureaucratic pretexts. First, somebody said there is a forest there, although we knew it was an airport for 50 years. Then somebody else said, oh, it's an archaeological site. Well, again, we knew it was an airport for 50 years, and nobody looked for artifacts there. So anyway, for various reasons, this thing gets delayed. And when you see a very well-organized investment where the deal was done at the top levels of the Greek state stalling, I mean, and then you start wondering, I mean, if I go and invest $10 million and I'm really a nobody compared to the Ellinico investment, would I be able to actually do it? So it needs Greece to reduce its bureaucracy, to find ways to coordinate investment. And if I was a politician running Greece, I would instruct a certain setup in which the investments are streamlined through a certain process, through a process that bypasses a lot of the bureaucracy at the local level or at other levels that might affect them. Now various governments, including the present one, actually have said again and again that they're going to do that, but they haven't done it. So it's very, very important to do that. I also think it's important for Greeks to invest to the extent that they can. I know that a lot of people are in bad shape because they have paid too much taxes, but there are still large corporations in Greece, Greek corporations, that could invest. So I hope that a reduction of the tax rate will help do that. But as I said, one of the things that Americans should think positively about Greece is that Greece is a stable country. And in the area where it is in, if you look around and look at Turkey and the Middle East, it's the most stable country. So it's important to have that stability. I would also try to, if I was in charge, to give at least a promise that I hope it can be kept, that tax rates are going to remain stable, because stability and certainty is crucially important for American and other investment and other foreign investment.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on our podcast, Professor Economidis. And as you indicated to us before our interview began, Professor Economidis has generously offered to continue the discussion with any of you listeners. And we've included his email address along with some of his articles in the show notes as well. So feel free to reach out.
And we look forward to having you back because we're really just at the beginning of Greece crawling out of of this mess. And frankly, maybe in a couple of weeks we'll have an ability to evaluate the competing economic visions that are likely to be presented at TIFF.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll be happy to join you again. Thank you.
Thanks again, guys, and tune again to the Greek Current next week.